Good evening and welcome to Thursday's Late Debate. Joining us here in studio tonight, we have Colm Brophy, Fine Gael TD for Dublin South West and Minister of State for Overseas Development, Aid and the Diaspora. Cathal Crowe, Fianna Fáil TD for Clare. Mairead Farrell, Sinn Féin TD for Galway West, South Mayo and spokesperson on public expenditure and reform. Christina Finn, political correspondent with thejournal.ie, and Michael McNamara, independent TD for Clare. Now, we want to hear from you, so do please get in touch. You can text us on 51551. You can email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_rte. Well, the Education Minister, Norma Foley, has been on her feet for just about an hour now, making statements and taking questions on the debacle over the Leaving Cert calculated grades errors. She began by apologising again.
On behalf of the Department of Education and Skills, I want to apologise sincerely to our Leaving Certificate students for the situation we are now in and for the upset it has caused. Students and their families, I appreciate, now want to know what happens next.
Yes, they do indeed. And here is Labour's education spokesman, Eoin O'Riordan.
You placed, your department placed, 61,000 dreams, 61,000 ambitions, 61,000 emotions, mental health of 61,000 young people into the hands of their teachers and then Polymetrica. And guess who we could trust? We could trust the teachers. But then this body that you employed in order to do this obviously made a mistake. Did you not road test it? Did you not road test it immediately? Did your department not say, this is the first time in the history of the state that we're not having a written exam, so we have to road test this?
And that was Eoin O'Riordan there. Conor Brophy, that is the question that is on everybody's lips today. This was such a huge step that we were taking. The first time in the history of the state that we were asking over 60,000 students to accept some sort of a technical process to decide what college place they might have. And it appears it wasn't road tested, certainly not road tested sufficiently.
Well, obviously, to begin, as the Minister has, it's important to note and to say to the students who are affected and to apologise for what happened, because it should never have happened. And I think everybody accepts that it should never have happened. I think the key thing, I suppose, we need to remember in this is that in the midst of a pandemic, a decision which no one really wanted to take, which was to cancel the Leaving Cert, had to be taken by the previous minister. And very, very quickly, an alternative process had to be put in place. And I think right from the minister on down through all the officials in the department and the department itself, everybody acted in good faith to try and put in place the best possible system and to ensure that system would work. And while I haven't had the opportunity to hear the minister speak in the Dáil tonight, I did hear her say at her press conference the other day that testing obviously was done on the process. Now, the fact that a mistake occurs obviously means that that testing didn't pick that up. And there's no question that
not just a mistake occurred, two separate mistakes occurred.
And weren't picked up. And that is absolutely, I think, awful. It's awful for the students, it's awful for their families, it's awful for all the people who've been caught up in it. I think the key thing that we need to focus on is, as the minister is doing, is to ensure that as quickly and as speedily as possible, we're able to get the correct information to those students. And the minister has made it very clear that no student who's got a place will be disadvantaged in any way, and that we will get the corrected grades.
Hang on a second. She did not make that clear, actually. She made it clear that actually some people may not be able to take the places that they will get. No, you said disadvantaged in any way.
I said that no student who has got a place will be disadvantaged in any way. So if you have a place offered to you in university, and if you've got your grades, your grades will not be lowered, they will not be taken down, and that for the students who are affected, that a result will be got to them in the quickest possible time.
Right. Just in relation to this company now that we never heard of before and now is on everybody's lips, Polymetrica, the decision was taken to go for this calculated grades process on May the 8th. Joe McHugh would have still been in place in the department at that stage. Do we know at what stage Polymetrica was brought in? Was that done under Joe McHugh's watch?
Well, can I say, in relation to that, and I want to say I'm saying this in the context of just having heard something from the Dáil contribution on the way in. What the minister seemed to indicate in her contribution tonight was that at a point in process, Polymetrica seemed to come in to advise the department on looking at what might be an outcome situation if there wasn't an actual leaving cert. When the decision was made then to not go ahead with the leaving cert, a process was used by the department to enable the fastest possible way of putting in place a company who could provide the type of specialist software needed to do the type of thing we're talking about. And that company was Polymetrica. And that is, I understand, the process and timing. But that, as I say, just that's from me listening
well,
to what
maybe
the minister
I can
answered.
Add to the understanding of that, because my colleague Barry Lenihan received a statement on the back of questions, detailed questions he put to the department earlier, and in that statement it says, having initially been engaged in an advisory capacity on the technical working group established as part of the contingency planning for the 2020 leaving cert, Polymetrica was then engaged to implement and deliver the system when the decision was taken on the 8th of May to postpone the leaving cert.
That's my understanding of word for word what I think the minister said in the Dáil this evening.
Well, I didn't actually understand from the minister's contribution this evening that Polymetrica was actually on the advisory group that was advising the department on what to do next, and then got the contract to do the thing they decided
to
do next.
I think my understanding is this, that the department was, as part of contingency planning, looking at what options could or possibly be implemented in the event of working, not being able to provide a full leaving cert. They then looked and had to look very, very quickly. The normal full procurement process that takes months and months and months to engage in wasn't going to be possible. There is, and I'm afraid I don't have the exact technical name for it, which the minister used in the Dáil tonight.
It's negotiated without prior notification.
They then used
that process to trigger what was to bring on board somebody, because the key thing, and
which is basically it's not any process at all, it's basically doing a process without a process.
Can I just say it's very easy actually to try and eradicate or forget or deliberately ignore what was actually happening at the time, which was we'd entered into a situation.
But I want to put you the question I'm asking. I appreciate we were in a very urgent situation.
We were in a situation which nobody wanted to be in.
But I want to get back to this point.
And we had an end timeline, which was by September, we had to commence people being able to go to college.
I appreciate that, Colin Brophy, but I want to put this point to you, that there was a company, or the principal of a company was on this technical advisory group. And when it came to the decision of what we were going to do, somebody who was on the group advising the department was then given the contract.
I'm absolutely sure that the department looked, and I doubt there are many companies or organisations in the world that engage in the type of specialist software. But can I just say, I'm absolutely sure that the department looked to try and deliver the best possible solution that they could get.
But you see, we can't be sure because there is no trail here now.
I would believe that the department did that. And I think it's very easy and very quickly, we do this in this country now, we try and second guess every single thing. I think that people, not just the minister, were acting in
Colin
good faith.
61,000 people are out there now, not knowing whether they have the right, they're in the right college, grade.
And the key thing is, by the way,
so we are entitled to ask these questions.
The key thing is, and those questions I think should be asked and should be looked at, but the key thing is at this moment in time is to get answers for those affected students, to get answers for their families in terms of what their grades are going to be and what the impact of that would be for them in college. And I think that's where our focus should be. I do think that we should look, and I think the minister has said this, by the way, quite clearly, that we will look at the process that took place and there should be an open look at it.
Okay. Katie, can I come in there just on the poly...
I'll just let Christina in because she, I think, has more information on that.
I was working on this this evening and I got in touch with the department to say basically that, Polymetrica was contracted to provide the statistical expertise initially at the basis of the contingency planning for the leaving cert. And at the time, the value for that contract was £71,500 and it was only meant to last 65 days. However, to date, they have received 163,000 because that contract was extended so that they could implement the calculated grades system. So the department has told me that the increase in cost due to the additional days outside of that contract was being charged at €1,100 per day for their work being carried out on that. And also, obviously, that the procurement process wasn't, you know, the normal process wasn't used at the time. And while I understand, obviously, that at the time it was a huge, you know, urgent matter to get the system up and running to get results out in September, I think it is right and proper to learn from and ask these questions of government because, you know, looking to other countries, we knew there was a possibility. And I think a lot of people nearly weren't that surprised yesterday when we heard there had been a blip of some kind with the Leaving Cert results because we had seen it in other countries, which is why the questions must be asked, I think, as to how they didn't get a heads up or they didn't put in all the sort of oversight and the checks and balances to make sure that this actually didn't happen.
Yeah. Okay, Mairead, you were trying to get in there. Thanks, Christine.
Yeah, just in relation to the model, I know that my colleague Donagh O'Leary had been saying from early on that the model should have been published so that it could be scrutinised. And I think that's very important because now we're seeing we're at a point where really it shows that it hadn't been scrutinised to the full effect. And that's something that my colleague Donagh O'Leary had been calling for on for months. We do see that now we're talking about those extra days being 1,100 per day. I mean, that's astronomical and in any situation, but particularly now when we see that these failings are in place. We had been saying from the start that third level places should be maximised and that if for particularly high demand courses that there should then be an allocations process for the more high demand courses through assessments by the third level institutions themselves. But I want to say one thing. I remember my Leaving Cert year. I remember how stressed I was at that time. That was in 2008. I was extremely stressed and that was a normal year and that was, I suppose, the normal year to have your Leaving Cert. I can't even imagine what those students are going through, what their families are going through and it's an extremely worrying time for all of them.
Yeah, I want to bring in Cathal. Cathal, you've been listening to the discussion here. Serious questions, surely, about how this was handled from the off.
I suppose, just as other speakers have said, central to all of this are Leaving Cert students, all 60,000 of them. It's been a hugely stressful year from the get-go for them. Prior to the February election, I was a teacher, a primary school teacher. So was Norma Foley. So I think she's perfectly positioned. I think she was a second-level teacher. I think she's perfectly positioned to know the stresses and the challenges they were facing. If the election had gone a different way for her, she would be leading her class through this process. So I think her heart is fully invested in this process.
I was trying to get established with Colm here earlier. Do you know if the decisions we're talking about now to go ahead and contract Polymetrica to put together this programme? Was that a decision that was taken by Norma Foley or had it been done? Was it a done deal when she arrived at the department?
I suppose the precise answer as to who was minister that oversaw that final procurement, I don't know. Polymetrica was an unknown company until the last couple of days to most of us. They were the company and we're now, as this is breaking, we're finding out that they were there in an advisory role as well. Just on that, I don't think we should get too caught up in procurement here. Almost to question procurement now, you know, I think the real focus is on what needs to happen here now. There's a new company has been brought in, ETS, Educational Testing Service. They're a world-leading non-profit organisation in the US and they're now rerunning these codes and they've found two errors and the department have found that. I think Norma Foley has acted swiftly, promptly. Our full concern here, it's not for Polymetric, and the minister has said there will be penalties regarding that 160,000 contract, rightly so, and that's for another day. But that contract right now for the 60,000 students, whether they're listening or not, is quite irrelevant.
But what they're concerned about is
going off and starting college and knowing where their next 4 years lie.
But Cathal, I'm thinking about all the principals out there, and we heard them all on the radio, on social media in August, when they were told, no ifs, no buts, they were running around trying to get their schools ready ready for opening. They were only given a couple of weeks to do it. And they were told they had to go through a procurement process in order to get the most basic changes made to the school, in order to just buy in basic things like sanitizers for the school. And they were told they had to go around gathering quotes in order, or they wouldn't be able to proceed or get the funding to do this. And then they find out that the biggest thing that that the department were involved in, or would ever be involved in, really, was done in this way. So I do think people will want to know, you know, how it's sauce for the goose and what's sauce for the gander.
Well, of course, questions regarding procurement and all that, and that'll come out in the coming days, and they're the questions that do need to be answered. But there's a far more immediate problem here. It's the problem that the whole business of Dáil this week has been wrapped around, and that is these 60,000 students, you know, and bringing more certainty into their lives. There could be, in the region of 6,500, I'm likely to get higher grades. There'll be some sitting at home wondering, you know, will those higher points get me a third level place, and will there be a third level place for me in the course of my preference? These are the real questions that I'm motivated by.
Well, I just see a tweet up here from Ella. I have a tweet up here from Ella, Carl. I am one of the 61,000. I want all questions. I want second guesses. This is my future we're all talking about. 61,000 dreams. That's from Ella. Sorry, Michael.
Yeah, no, there's one other question that I have, and that's with regard to this. Was set up, this algorithm was set up to deliver a fair result, and part of that algorithm initially was the school's historical performance. That was taken out, I understand, at the last minute because of the furore that there was in Scotland and England. So if it was part of the algorithm to deliver a fair result and it was taken out at the last minute, instead of unfairly advantaging students who went to those schools, the pendulum does appear anecdotally to have swung the other way and they were unfairly disadvantaged. Now, I'm not saying that was an error. It might have been foreseeable, it might have been the minister's intention to avoid political difficulty, but did it deliver a fundamentally unfair result for students who went to schools which were historically high performing?
Many of which were private, of course, not all of which were private, and this is being litigated in the courts right now.
And I think rather than have the, if there is an unfairness there, and the department will know that, rather I'd like it to be addressed now, because what we don't want is for them to stonewall this and be dragged kicking and screaming. And if they're to lose this court case, I think it would be catastrophic, because they have an opportunity now to address everything rather than have to wait to be dragged kicking and screaming through the courts.
Yeah, right.
I would say on that, I think we have an awful habit, I find, that these kind of things end up dragging on for weeks and months rather than all questions being answered immediately. We need to make sure that all the information that is out there immediately, so that we can deal with this situation.
That would be an appalling vista, though, Colm, if one this court, one of the court cases, more than one, as I understand it, underway now, were to come to a finding that there was a fundamental unfairness built into the algorithm.
Well, I don't think we should try and prejudge what the outcome of a court case would be, because obviously people have a right to take a court case and they have a right to make a challenge. I do think, though, I want to go to the core point of it. For the students who are out there who are caught up in this, we need to keep the focus on getting them their answers. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of students and their families who have been through a year which is like no other. I mean, it's effectively a year of hell for Leaving Cert students. And I think we owe it to them collectively, in terms of all the efforts of all of us as politicians, to keep the focus on making sure that as quickly as possible we can give them the most comprehensive set of answers as to what their grades are and what has changed for them. And I think the minister is absolutely focused on that.
But equally, there are tens, not thousands, but tens of native German speakers who didn't get top grades and were downgraded. Something just doesn't seem right about the grading system and the way it worked this
and
year.
On that note, I actually sat German Leaving Cert, although I wasn't in my school, because my mother is German and we spoke German at home. So I do understand that when there was huge difficulties.
Killian's, which is just I know,
but I'm just saying that it was difficult for students, also students who were doing an extra subject outside of school.
Katie, I think it's important to reiterate to Ella and any other students listening here tonight, things are moving at a rapid pace. Nothing here is ideal. This issue was first identified on Tuesday night, a second error identified on Wednesday, swiftly reported to Taoiseach. opposition leaders updated. We're now 48 hours on from it, and we've a commitment to fully run the model again.
Hang on a second now. Let's go back over that timeline.
Not finished with that timeline, because in the coming days we'll have come out the other end of this, and there'll be full clarity for students. I think it's important we move with pace on this. The questions about procurement, of course, yes, let's bring them up and let's discuss them as well. But that's for another day. We find out what
let's
the future students.
Just indulge me for a second. Let's go back over the timeline of who knew what and when they knew it. So as we understand from the minister's statements this evening, it was discovered and the department was alerted on Tuesday. She was alerted on Wednesday afternoon. The Taoiseach was alerted at the same time. Now they said nothing. At that point, the CEO offers went out that Wednesday. Nothing was said to anyone. No university was contacted. CEO were not contacted. It wasn't until Friday then that Leo Varadkar, Simon Harris and Eamon Ryan were brought into the circle of trust. And then we had five people now on the political side knew this explosive story, massive political implications from it. And they went into cabinet on Tuesday and said nothing to anybody and gave no indication that this thing was about to break over everyone and with implications, huge implications for the country. Was that really making the students the priority, or was the priority keeping the story out of the media, making sure nobody would leak it until everyone had their ducks in a row?
I don't think that's how Minister Foley has operated here from the get-go. And I think if you look at the time frame, what happened was detection of the problem on Tuesday, the minister becoming aware on Wednesday, and the department working very intensively over that following 48 hours to test it internally. And that's where they identified, not Polymetrica, not anybody else.
Doesn't it indicate a huge lack of trust that the cabinet could not be told to
this? It was the department that identified the second problem, and that related to running the three strongest subjects with the non-core subjects.
Carl, doesn't it indicate a huge lack of trust, a fundamental lack of trust, if cabinet could not be trusted with this information?
No, there is trust. I don't sit a cabinet, but I know many of the characters there, and I'm friends, and many of them are party colleagues, six of them, in fact. And I have faith that there's good cohesion there. Things are working well. And this is an unprecedented challenge, and it's unprecedented political times. This is a working relationship none of us foresaw, but it's working well. And I mean, even if you look at the economy now, it's nothing's rosy at the moment, but certainly the decline we had expected is going to be less severe, and there's projections of some economic growth next year. These are small indicators that the crisis, nothing is perfect, and I want to stress that, but the actions being taken are stopping an economic collapse and downfall, and that is essential. There's two things playing off each other here. There's the health crisis, but also the economic fallout of it.
I think it's
been as well managed as it can be.
We will be actually touching on that later in the programme, Carl. We'll get back to that. But I want to bring in Christina. Christina, what is the feeling around political circles in relation to how this was handled and the timeline that we were just laying out there?
Yeah, I think it is rather unprecedented that the cabinet did sit on Tuesday and the details were known at that point. My understanding is that on Friday, Eamon Ryan and Leo Varadkar were given an indication there was an issue, but that they were not given the full details or the full extent that there could be thousands of students impacted. But in fact, that they had their usual meeting, you know, between the leaders where they iron out issues, and that's where they got the full briefing on Monday night. But that was still ahead of the cabinet that was held on Tuesday. And I think a lot of ministers would be scratching their head as to why they weren't informed at that time. Perhaps it was that they didn't want to leak out. That is what some people are saying, that even though there is cabinet confidentiality,
Simon Harris, I mean,
well, there is cabinet confidentiality, but as we know, these things do tend to get out. Speaking to a number of TDs, there's mixed feelings about it in terms of they understand that this was a very serious issue, that they wanted to have all the answers ready to go, in terms of that they didn't want to hold a press conference and have all these questions thrown at them without having the answers as to what was going to happen next. But obviously, big questions would have to be asked in terms of why the trust wasn't there for those details to be laid at cabinet.
I mean, particularly Simon Harris, surely he needed to begin preparations to find additional places for as many of these students as possible.
I think, though, Katie, with any crisis, it's about establishing your facts. And I don't think any unproven conspiracy theory does nothing to advance the cause of students here tonight.
But, Carl, given the priority, as we all are aware and has been said over and over again now, was finding college places now for this possibly up to 1,000 students that will have their grades upgraded and will be entitled to a different course. Surely the priority then should be to immediately alert the colleges to what was going to be required, what was coming down the track. Say, we don't know yet how many we're going to need, but there, you know, this is going to be an issue. And can we get going on what we can do with this?
So I know that Minister Foley and Minister Simon Harris have both been in touch with all higher education institutes and the CEO. There's been rigorous communication over the last...
A full week after the story.
I don't know the precise time of calls, but I know that a huge amount of effort has gone in. And over the coming days, all students are going to get a text message as soon as this rerun through the ETS system, the American Educational Testing Service, as soon as it's been rerun and we fully establish, you know, what kind of figures are we talking about here in terms of the error cases, that'll be communicated quickly, and then the options for those, including, and I just heard coming in the road to RTE here, the statement of the Minister in the Dáil, including those who are considering entering the UCAS system in Britain, there'll be accommodations made for as many cases as possible. The government should be bending over backwards. These students are under immense stress, huge stress, and that's central to everything that's happening right now.
But as much as the government, I think, are trying to put people's minds at ease with the minister up on her feet there this evening, there still is a lot of questions in terms of the impact and the numbers. You know, they did have an idea yesterday that there was about 800 or 900. Then Simon Harris seemed to have a better ballpark estimated last night at the parliamentary party meeting, where he indicated it could be 1,000. Now some indicating there'd be 1,200 places needed. And remember, he had already added extra additional places in the colleges throughout the pandemic. But I think the real issue and concern is around some of the courses that can't just be based online, in terms of places like medical and dental courses that obviously need labs and obviously just physical space to allow those people. So I think there's still going to be questions asked for days to come about where these places are going to come from.
One question, I don't know if you have any sense of this, Cullen, but Minister again confirming this evening that if you do end up having to take on a different course next year, if it's deferred, you won't have to pay your fees next year, you'll get your SUSE grant again.
Yeah.
But what about if you have forked out thousands of euro for accommodation or you know, other arrangements for a college course now you no longer are going to do?
Well, you're right in that I don't have any definitive knowledge on this, because it's such a breaking thing. I mean, obviously what the minister was saying this evening in terms of what the state has direct control over, which is that if you are in a course at the moment and you want to defer a new course option till next year and start again next year in the course of your choice, that obviously you won't be disadvantaged in any way in terms of SUSE or in terms of any of those options. Can I just make
a quick contribution
on the point you were asking earlier on?
You can in a moment, but can we just get on this point, because it is a hugely important point, because people will have put down their deposits and spent a lot of money after the minister herself was aware that this problem was there.
Well,
it was during that week a lot of deposits got put down.
Yeah, well, I think it is important to remember and go back to what the minister has said about this from the very start, because she's been quite clear. At the earlier stage of this, the minister had no indication as to the extent or how many students were affected or to what the problems were. And I think a lot of what is now being forgotten about that is that if the minister, I think, and she would have been quite wrong to, if the minister had come out at that point and made a public statement without acquiring the knowledge that she then subsequently got to be able to target her response to give as much information as possible, she could have been very fairly criticised, but she didn't. She did it absolutely the correct way, in my opinion, and she acquired as much knowledge as she could so
but
as that she could
target
then
spent money,
that response. And I think that
do
is
you think
important.
That they should be entitled to some
well,
sort of a rebate?
I think the situation is that the minister did the right thing in the right timeline. Now, obviously, people are going to be impacted on this in so many ways, but the state can immediately look and reassure people about what will happen next year in terms of SUSE and in terms of their grant. But other things in terms of private accommodation, etc., you know, that is a very complex situation that I'm sure will be played out now over the coming days.
I think we also need to remember a year is a long time for a 17, 18 year old. And to say that to wait a year is a significant amount of time, especially when their friends are potentially
It's important to remember that we're trying to, in every way possible, ensure that people can do courses this year. So in terms of every effort has been made by every aspect of the department and every aspect of everybody involved in this to try and get people into places this year.
Absolutely. But it has been acknowledged that that won't be possible in some cases.
But there may be, and it's important to recognise this, there may be just that impossibility that in certain courses where there is an actual physical barrier to the number of people who can sit in a science lab that you might not be able to facilitate.
But we also do know that so many families have been hit massively financially in the last year, and they've tried to fork out in places like my own city of Galway, where rent is extremely high, to pay for this rent. And now then they were told just before they were to start that they didn't need to get accommodation, that a lot of it would be online. So I think there's been huge confusion. But I really do think that young people have been hit massively by this pandemic, and we can't underestimate that. We see youth unemployment is high. A lot of them haven't been able to avail of PUP. They have not been able to do their summer jobs. Then they're told to pay for this accommodation. A lot of them couldn't pay because they had no finances coming in, and now they're being hit again. So I think we need to recognise that it's been very, very hard
As a TD, I spent a lot of time earlier this year talking to the University of Limerick and trying to get them to refund monies paid by students for accommodation that they no longer needed because of the lockdown. I was less successful in negotiations with private institutions that offer student accommodation. The nature of student accommodation buildings is that you pay in advance for a full term. And while the University of Limerick, which is a state body, did the right thing, lots of private owned institutions did not. So there are many students who have paid accommodation now up to Christmas for student accommodation, which they may not need and probably won't get a refund from in the case of private institutions.
Okay, just a few. Are we getting a big reaction in here? Why are we surprised this went wrong is one of them. A bit of perspective is needed, says another texter. How realistic is it to expect that such a large logistical exercise would be pulled off without a hiccup in the time allowed? Another one says, sounds like another case of the famous five, Michael, Leo, Simon, Eamon and Norma, another malfunction. And another texter asking, what is so specialised about the coding used to allocate leaving certificate marks? What programming language was used? Why won't they publish the programming code? And as you say, that was called for even before we were anywhere near the situation we're in now. We leave it there. This will roll on, obviously, but we leave it there for this evening. I want to move on to the story of the other big story today. Supreme Court Judge Seamus Wolfe, who did not break any law or knowingly breach any guidelines in attending the Oireachtas Golf Society dinner in Galway, in County Galway in August. That's according to the former Chief Justice Susan Denham, whose report concluded today that his resignation in the circumstances would be unjust and disproportionate. Just want to have a quick listen to Michael McDool, who was on Drive Time earlier this evening.
The Oireachtas Golf Society has about as much official status as the RTE Golf Society, if there is such a thing. It's not a political event, and as I understand it, I've never been at any of their events, but it consists mainly of retired members of the Oireachtas and their families. Only a minority of the people who are involved are TDs, and it's certainly not a party political event. There were people at that event from right across the political spectrum when they were members of the Oireachtas.
And that was Senator Michael McDool, former Attorney General himself, of course. I'll go to you first on this, Colm. That issue, this was almost an apolitical event because it was, it was not really an Oireachtas outfit. It's just, it had the name, but that wasn't exactly what it was. Can I just take issue with one thing? It wasn't really a cross-party thing. Apart from Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil politicians, many of them retired. I don't think there was any. Was there any Sinn Féin politicians there? Or
no, I don't think anyone was invited anyway that I know of. But I mean, it was in my constituency, and I'll say one thing that it angered so many people in the local area when they couldn't hold their weddings, and then they see this kind of a shindig happening in Clifton.
Yeah, because Colm, I was actually presenting Liveline the day after this story broke. And the calls we got on that came on air that day, the callers who said they had never called a radio programme in their life, the stories of sacrifice and the agonizing choices that families had to make when it came to burying loved ones, to who would get to see their loved one in a nursing home. And, you know, parsing it down to the 5 or 10 or whatever the number was at the time. And then to when they saw that, 80 people had gathered at this for this golf function, it caused enormous pain and anger.
Yeah, but I mean, quite clearly, and I said this at the time, I totally agree with that pain and anger, and I totally agree with that annoyance. It annoyed me as someone who's never been invited to a Rock the Scolf Society event in one life and hardly knew it existed. And to see people who collectively came together and if in breach of the rules and in breach, as you quite rightly say, of just all the things that people really felt about us being in it together and whatever, I think it did incredible damage to the collective efforts of everybody on COVID in terms of fighting it. And I think I really regret that it happened. I think at this stage, from what I've heard, certainly from the contributions of many of the people who are at it, who've spoken since, that they regret that they went. And they really do regret. It shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have taken place. It's, you know, I don't think there's a single person that I know that supports the fact that it happened or in any way would give any type of acceptable type of view that it was right in any way. So that has been my view consistently in relation to what happened in Clifton. It was wrong, wrong, wrong.
And of course, Derek Leary immediately resigned a little while later.
And can I just make the point you made about politicians and trying to, in some way, ascribe this to a Fianna Fáil or Fianna Gael event? In the fact, as I say, I don't know really anything about the Golf Society. I certainly don't think it is restricted to any one party or anything like that. And I also would make the point, just as a TD, that my understanding is there was two TDs attended at the minister to speak at the event and think they were wrong. They were wrong to do it. There were a number of senators who did it. They were wrong to do it. But the vast, vast majority of TDs of all parties right across the spectrum, including all the independents, either were never invited or didn't attend. And I think that is important.
Just in relation to those senators who did attend and who lost the whip, in those days when the public outroar was outrage was being so loudly felt, and they still haven't got the whip back, but they have been appointed to committees as representatives of their parties. So is this losing the whip completely just a facade?
No, I don't. I wouldn't agree with that. I think losing the whip in any party is a very serious thing for an individual and is never.
If they're not currently members of the parliamentary party, how can they be then appointed?
It should never be taken lightly. I think it is important to recognise the fact that they were disciplined on that matter and they did lose the whip. And I think that it hasn't been restored, by the way. And I think they recognise the fact, as far as I'm aware.
What material, you know, discipline, you know, materially, what does that mean for them?
Well, I think materially for people, you're no longer a member of your parliamentary party. You no longer have the ability to speak at your parliamentary party meetings, to express your views at your parliamentary meetings, to come in and talk in the same way that you would have, because you're not a member of the parliamentary party.
But you can still be appointed to a committee to represent that party.
Well, the people who lose the whip in a party don't cease to be a member of the political party unless they either leave it or choose to leave it. So they leave the parliamentary party. But I think that is a strong sanction, and I wouldn't underestimate the effect that has on people. And I also think it has had an effect on a number of individuals in terms of themselves personally, in terms of realising that what they did was wrong.
Going back to Seamus Wolfe, because he's the issue today, Justice Denham, as I said there, had said that if for him to resign would be unjust and disproportionate. Would you agree with Susan?
I'm just going to say, as a minister of the government, I'm just going to say, obviously, that is a matter for the judiciary. The judiciary asked retired Justice Denham to produce a report, and she has, and that's been accepted by the judiciary.
Michael, this report, a lot of people had expected that there would be some sanction No sanction at all for Seamus Wolfe.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read the report, but I've read media commentary on it and accounts of it, and it does appear that it is accepted that it was an error on his part and that he shouldn't have gone to the golf event and the dinner, but that it was a matter of proportionality and that the response needs to be proportionate. And yes, it was a mistake for him to go, but it was not one that would require him to resign from the court.
Can I just read you a couple of bits and pieces from the report, because it seemed to be a lack of situational awareness is the only way I could describe it in terms of how he described how he was unaware of the fact that the restrictions that had been in place were being breached, because he was aware at that time that the restriction was 50 people, no more than 50 in a room. But he says that he didn't, there was a table plan obviously which would have showed exactly how many people were there, and many other people. But look, I mean, this table plan.
I'm not going to justify what he did, but I'm just, the question is more, is it proportionate? I think, and I haven't read the report, but I believe it focused on the proportionality. Was it proportionate that he lose his job? Now, going back to the Liveline thing, I mean, I do think we need to learn from the enormous pain that people suffer during the lockdown as we approach restrictions going forward, because there are strict restrictions in place in respect of the number of people who can attend funerals in Dublin right now and in Donegal right now. And, you know, that pain that was displayed and we heard very clearly and was very real on Liveline needs to be listened to, because in my home county of Clare today, this morning, it was announced that communions and confirmations were being cancelled for public health reasons, based on public health advice that the Bishop of Killaloe received. And he was very clear that the advice wasn't that the communions and confirmations themselves that posed a risk, it was the gatherings afterwards. Now, I just would question whether that's the same thing with funerals. Is it the funerals themselves? Is it people in a church, which by and large are large open spaces that are well ventilated? Or is it the gatherings afterwards that are the risk? And if it is the gatherings afterwards, then surely maybe we need to look at the cathartic effect that it has for people to go to the funeral of a loved one, to be able to facilitate that, even if it means that they can't gather afterwards as they normally would, but to be able to attend the actual funeral of a loved one. You know, we do need to move forward with a degree of humanity, because I think people felt that that was robbed of them, that very important moments in their life was taken from them, and maybe last moments. And as somebody who buried somebody very close to me this year, I appreciate how horrendous it must be not to at least be able to go through the funeral experience. So I think we need to learn from that grief, as well as blame, and as well as seek retribution. Because sometimes when you suffer, or feel bullied, it's hard to see others not suffering the same thing because of the pain that you've suffered. But we do need to learn from it, maybe, and be a bit more constructive about it.
I do think one thing that we need to remember as well here is that the whole Golfgate debacle really did impact public confidence in politicians and public life, and that's something that we absolutely need to address. And one thing, the issue here is that the Judicial Council Act hasn't been implemented, mm-hmm. and that there's no real sanctions that could be imposed. Now, that needs to be implemented straight away. We saw another issue this week with Michael Darcy. Again, it had an impact on public confidence in politicians and that. And SIPO had been saying in 2016, they said it to the government. In 2018, they had it in their annual report. And in 2019, again, they said that Section 22, which includes the cooling off period of 1 year for politicians, should be included under Section 18, which would mean that they can investigate and they can sanction any contraventions to the Act. Myself and my colleague Piers Doherty have put an amendment to that Lobbying Act bill, and I do think that needs to be dealt with immediately. I mean, these are issues that have been flagged by SIPO for a 4-year period and nothing was done about it, and I do think that's important, because we need to restore public confidence again in public life, especially if we're asking people to follow.
I do think the outcry of the public in terms of Golfgate and who attended that kind of had two strains to it, in terms of the breach of the procedures, but also that it just looked so bad that politicians and the judiciary seem to be rubbing shoulders. And this is what that report as well looked at, saying that the separation of judiciary and politics, that there didn't seem to be a reason for any sort of resignation, obviously saying it's unjust and disproportionate. But I think Pat Leahy has really good analysis of it in the Irish Times today, basically saying that what it comes down to now is that it seems to be one rule for politician and another for judges, which I think is very much some of the feedback that I was hearing in Leinster House in terms of the politicians like Derek Leary and Phil Hogan, who ultimately swift action was taken against them. And perhaps with the passage of time now, the report coming out at a calmer time perhaps than it was in August has resulted in Seamus Woolf facing no sanctions
could,
at all.
Could I get in there, Katie?
Yes,
just like my party colleague, as we mentioned here a few times, Derek Leary, and look what he did and what everyone did there. It was wrong a million times over. And I think it was one of two very controversial large public gatherings involving politicians
I'll let you finish that point in a second, Carl, but I really did want to read this paragraph from the report, which...
Interesting.
Well, it's the one where he described, because you're saying it was wrong, but Justice Woolf was kind of indicating that he just had no idea of what was going on, because he said throughout the dinner, Mr. Justice Woolf stated that he had no reason to believe that the Oireachtas Golf Society dinner was anything different or larger than what was occurring in the room in which he was dining. He indicated that at no time was he aware that there was a second group of diners from the Oireachtas Golf Society in an adjoining room behind the wall, right behind him. That's what I was, when I referred earlier to a lack of situational awareness. That's what we're talking about.
I think whether it's partitions or the 18th hole, the 19th hole, or the third course, I think it's wrong. Fine, go out and play your golf. It was the gathering, the dinner, and it was the large indoor gathering, I think, that sparked all the controversy, rightly so. And my colleague Derek Leary, you know, on the 20th of August, he resigned. He showed leadership from the get go. Phil Hogan, a little bit later, coming with that, but it had to happen. And I think it was one of two, I would say, controversial political gathering events. The Bobby Storey funeral, of course, which hasn't been mentioned yet, but that was equally, and that fizzled out, and there wasn't even a corpse in the coffin, as it later transpired, but that was wrong as well. What I think needs to happen here, a lot of people are saying around the Dáil today, commentators are saying, you know, should the judge resign? I think it would be wrong for us to interfere in that. I think that point really needs to be made strongly. We've seen in the US over the last fortnight how there is over interference in their judiciary. It's way too politicised. You have Supreme Court judges with old affiliations to Republicans, Democrats. In Ireland, we can happily say a century on, the judiciary has more or less the wider public respect, and it's independent of politics. There have been two recommendations, though, and we haven't mentioned this yet. There was two recommendations have come out of this. One is that there will be a code of judicial conduct and judicial ethical guidelines need to be introduced. And the final thing I would say is that our judiciary are in the realm of laws and law and carrying out the enforcing law through the court system. And the fact is, wrong and all as this might have been on a moral level at the time, in terms of Justice Seamus Woolf's attendance at Clifton, there wasn't a law that evening, as I understand it, underpinning guidelines. So he didn't break a law. He did something morally very wrong, and that trial has happened now for many weeks.
Carl, if you're talking about an arm's length between the judiciary and politics, I think Shane Ross, the former minister, his point in his bill was arguing the exact opposite in terms of where we were with the judiciary and the reforms that need to happen.
I'm going to have to take a break there because we are almost out of time and I have one other issue that I want to get to.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And the last item I want to get to is an interview that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar gave to Ian Keogh, which was published in The Currency today. In it, there was a very wide-ranging interview, but one segment of it really caught some people's eye. It is where he starts considering whether or not we're using the right criteria to make the decisions we're now making around restrictions and lockdowns. And this is a direct quote. He says, "What I see other countries doing, Belgium is the most recent example, is that they are no longer using case numbers to make their decisions on restrictions and on policy. They are looking at hospitalizations, ICU capacity and on deaths. It is a job for us as politicians to say to the public health people that maybe we should be focusing on that. The objective was to make our health service did not get overwhelmed, not to lock down the country and the economy until there is no COVID at all. That is not realistic. Anthony O'Connor, Professor of Gastroenterology at Talla Hospital. Good evening.
Hi, Katie.
Yeah, you took issue with that today.
Yeah, I was disappointed with it. I mean, I don't think you can compare us to Belgium. First of all, Belgium haven't done that yet anyway. It's just something they're considering at the moment. But, like, Belgium's in the top six for bed capacity in Europe, and we're fourth last. I mean, they're playing senior and we're playing junior B, really. Like, and we've 6 critical care beds per 100,000 in Ireland. Belgium has 16. So they have a lot more slack in being able to sort of watch the cases tick into intensive care than we do. And, I mean, he's right when he says that only 1% of our hospital beds are occupied by COVID at the moment. That's really good. But he doesn't refer to is that, like, having 1% of your hospital beds occupied when your hospital is running at 85% occupancy, like it is across Europe, is a totally different thing compared to Ireland when you're at sort of 100, 102, 104%. So we had 200 people on trolleys this morning and 120 people are in hospital with COVID compared to sort of 6 people in hospital a few months ago. So, you know, the situation here is actually quite different. And the other thing that I sort of took issue with was, I think a lot of people were saying that the communication was better under the previous government and things like that. And Leo Varadkar himself was a big part of that. He was a very clear communicator during the crisis. And then a few weeks ago, you had Micheál Martin came out and gave a very well-received speech about how it should be. Then yesterday, you had Stephen Donnelly going into the Dáil with Neffert, and it really felt like there was a united front, and they were saying, well, this is the way, this is how we're going to do things. And then the sort of Taoiseach comes out this morning and says, oh, well, maybe there's a different way. Maybe we should be doing things a different way entirely. So I think people have a right to expect that the government will be on the same page. Shortly.
Yeah, let me just quote yourself back to yourself from Twitter today. I don't think things are robust enough in Ireland in September 2020 to be dealing with a junior coalition partner carrying on like this.
Well, yeah, I mean, my understanding of it, look, I'm probably the least qualified person you have on to talk about the Constitution and things, but my understanding of the Constitution was that you collect the responsibility in the Cabinet, and the Cabinet argue things out, but when they make a decision, that's the decision and that's the direction the country goes in. And it kind of seemed odd to me that you had the Minister for Health and Neffert in the Dáil saying one thing yesterday, and then you kind of turn on the news, having to argue the case,
actually, because they were being asked about, you know, why we are taking the road we're taking and having to hold the line on that.
Yeah. And the Taoiseach seemed to hold a different view this morning.
No, he didn't.
Yeah. Well,
No, he didn't. And I mean, look, apart from the type of flippant throwaway comments about junior coalition partners and that type of stuff, which I don't think helps whether you're tweeting or talking in any capacity, the Taoiseach fully supports the actual government position and the way the government is approaching this. He's an integral part of it. In a wide-ranging interview, what he did was he made reference to how other countries are looking at it and how they're doing it. I think that's absolutely fair. That's what an awful lot of people have said in various type of commentaries. But there's absolutely no question the Taoiseach is completely on the one page, absolutely, with the way the government has approached this to date. Most of the time we've been in this COVID, it was a government being led by him, and the approach being taken continues into this government, which is to quite clearly have Neffert as the primary advisor to government on public health issues, and for government to take on that advice and to have, as we have, our five-stage process.
Why throw this out there like this, in this way? He surely, and the position he has, he must have discussed this with Dr. Ronan Glenn and other people
absolutely.
On Neffert
and
must understand
and
why they are giving the advice they are giving.
And the Taoiseach is quite clear, absolutely. But
this appears to be on the side
in a wide-ranging interview, there's a focus being taken potentially disproportionately or possibly deliberately for whatever reason. There was as you quite rightly mentioned, there was a discussion on how other countries look at it. No question of Ireland moving to do that in any immediate way. And also there was just that thing which we are all talking about.
It is a job for us as politicians to say to the public health people that maybe we should be focusing on that being hospitalisation and ICU numbers as opposed to case numbers.
Can I also say that it is important, and it's a thing that is constantly said to us as people in government, that you do have to now, recognising that we're going to be living with COVID for a very long period of time, look at how we're going to do that living with it. And that affects both the wellness of people.
Do that in media interviews?
The Taoiseach, you have to have a situation where people are able to give an extensive interview. You, in your profession, would want someone to give an extensive interview and be willing to talk to you and answer questions. You then can't criticise them for actually engaging in that. But he's been quite clear, 100%,
absolute support for what the government policy is. He is, at the end of the day, the Taoiseach and the future Taoiseach of this government.
What he specifically says as well is that we have to say to public health experts that it can't be public health only. And I think it's very interesting what Anthony has said there in relation to our ICU capacity. And also, obviously, there would be concerns about the long-term impact of the virus on those who aren't in ICU. I mean, we know that there's reports of people suffering from great fatigue for a very long period of time. But the reality
this will
is
be a very popular line with a lot of people, because people are very fed up with the way we're going about it, and people are asking this question.
But I
of
course, we're all fed up with, you know, having to live with this virus. Absolutely. I think everyone is finding it difficult. But the reality is the Taoiseach shouldn't be running to the media in relation to this, which he has a habit of doing. He should be raising these with NPHET directly. He is part of the government.
But for some time there has been, you'll hear otherwise, but there has been differing views emerging from Cabinet over the last number of weeks, if not months, in terms of the strategy that is being followed. You'll hear that there is a united front and support for government policy and the strategy we are pursuing. But there's also references in terms of when Leo Varadkar was Taoiseach, the message was about flattening the curve. And you'll remember Simon Harris and Leo Varadkar coming out and repeating that continuously. Okay. And there definitely is a narrative now emerging and concern about a need to crush the curve. And I think that is what the Taoiseach is pointing towards.
I mean, initially we were told that we needed to flatten the curve in order to ensure that our healthcare system wasn't overrun and that we didn't run out of healthcare capacity because we had such little capacity. In 2018, the Department of Health's Health Service Capacity Review said we needed 430 ICU beds. Coming into this crisis, we had 225. And what I'm amazed by is in the last 6 months, the very limited amount of capacity increase there has been. What have we been doing for 6 months? Yes, I appreciate there's an excellent winter plan. Hundreds, if not thousands, of medics are going to be hired.
We're over time in 30 seconds.
I suppose with 442 cases tonight, 14 in my own county in Clare, I don't think it's a time for anyone to be pushing back right now on public health advice. There's a midterm plan for living with COVID. There is a winter hospital plan, $600 million, the largest injection of capital ever. It's not a panacea.
There are 37 people on trolleys in Limerick.
I'm going to have to go because I am way, way over. This is, of course, a debate we will be continuing next week. I will be back with you on air here on Saturday, but from Late Debate from the team this week. Good night.